Please be seated. The next case on the panel's oral argument calendar is Lee Zimbarski. Forgive me if I mispronounce. Versus Spring Mountain Treatment Center and Daryl DeGrucco. Case number 66398. Mr. Olson, there you go.
I am one.
Please proceed.
May I please the court, Eric Olson, appearing for the appellant, Lee Zimbarski. We'd like to reserve just 2 minutes. The court undoubtedly is familiar with the facts. They're unfortunate facts, but they involve, obviously, the treatment of Mr. Zimbarski's son, Sean Zimbarski, at the mental health facility, and then his release into the community and specifically to his father's home. The defendant's position is that this is simply a malpractice case, medical malpractice case, under the definition of 41809, requiring an affidavit under 41A071, which there wasn't. What was provided along with the complaint in this case, which was filed in proper person by Mr. Zimbarski, was an investigation report of the Division of Public and Behavioral Health. Subsequent to that initial document later in the case, Mr. Zimbarski also provided to the court, in the context of a motion for reconsideration, the conclusions of the division that, in fact, the facility was out of compliance with the regulations.
You're not arguing that either of those determinations amount to a 41A071 affidavit, though, correct?
No, Your Honor. I don't think we can go that far.
Yeah.
What I maintain, though, is this isn't a medical malpractice case, as the court determined the defendant argued, but garden variety negligence. Both sides agree that one has to look at the nature of the grievance. Both the Warden case here and the Smith case in California say that, so we need to do that. This case isn't about the decision, the medical decision to discharge the patient. It's about the failure of a licensed social worker and an MA, which is a Master of Arts. We don't really know master of what, but presumably with some kind of psychological training. It's their failure to exercise due care in the planning and the mechanics of the discharge plan, in actually executing the discharge plan for release of a diagnosed psychotic into the community.
We don't consider that a medical decision. Discharge process, whatever that may be, not based upon a medical condition?
Well, it's not a medical decision. The doctor's decision was to discharge, and there are certain rules that are under the code, under NAC, which go about saying how you go about that, how you plan, and the things you have to do. Among the things you have to do, you have to prepare a plan and you have to follow it. You have to find appropriate placement. You have to inform the family about, even an adult, it just says inform the family that this person is coming out. You have to document it all. And you have to arrange for the implementation of the plan. Well, there was a plan, I guess, of sorts. Part of the plan was to, because there had been specific concerns raised by Sean Zimbarski about going to his father's home. He didn't want to go there. This is during the course of his review, and even as late as the day of his discharge, he didn't want to go there. He was restless when asked about his father. There was an obvious plan, a problem, and that was part of the plan. The plan was, we've got to find someplace else for him to go. And there's a requirement that if you do that, if you say he's going to go to a different place, you've got to verify the address. It's admitted, I think that the underlying negligence is there, it's not really disputed. What was done was below the standard of care. It was in the plan for him to find another place. He was asked about this North Las Vegas location, and he gave a sort of vague response.
Whose standard of care? The standard of care for a social worker, for a physician, for a mental health provider. I mean, one of the things that I think is a challenge for the court in this case, at least for me, is that the allegations in the complaint seem to conflate these various concepts. Now, I am not being critical. I recognize, having drafted a few complaints myself, that one tends to insert a lot of different allegations, and it's not expected to be written with the precision of some other instruments or documents. But nevertheless, there does seem to be this crossover. So, to me, the important question is whether or not, in assessing the standard of care, it is necessary to resort to the opinion of an expert, as opposed to evaluating the standard of care from the standpoint of the assistance or non-assistance of an expert. It seems to be kind of a... So, which of your claims can be presented without the necessity of a professional? Now, maybe a social worker doesn't fit within Chapter 41A anyway, but...
Let me address that.
Yeah.
First of all, as the court...
Sorry, it's a long-winded question, but I'm trying to...
It's the central question in a lot of ways, so I appreciate it being asked. First of all, the complaint was drafted by Mr. Zimborski himself, improper person.
I get that.
And I think that that's one of the things I said in my opening brief is, you know, it's a lot more difficult to get your point across than you think, we as lawyers think. There is overlap, but I think the only claim that really implicates a potentially 41A071 is the professional negligence claim, which is part of the second claim for relief. The first claim is just pure negligence. The third claim alleges malpractice of the social workers, if you look at the allegations, gross negligence of the social worker, and it does allege negligence per se. If you look at what 071 requires as far as the affidavit, it requires the affidavit of a medical expert. Well, if you're reviewing the negligence of a social worker, then you can't provide that affidavit. So I think implied in the definition of medical malpractice in .09 is the idea it applies to medical services. That might be the doctor, that might be the PA, that might be the nurse, it might even be, you know, someone who's in the room changing the bedpan. I don't know. But the social workers are a separate group of people. They are the ones in charge of this plan. Now, so we're clear, the MAC sections we've cited are sections that apply to the facility. The sections we cited concerning, there's another section we cited that addresses the third claim, the per se claim, which talks about the standard of care of social workers. It actually defines malpractice of social workers in two varieties, one being gross negligence and malpractice and gross negligence, that comprises the incompetence standard. So when looking at the third claim for relief, I think if you look at those standards, that's how you determine what is malpractice on the part of a social worker. You're going to look at those sections. Whether or not you need an affidavit under 071, I think is a function of what the claim is. We're not, it implies there's some action on behalf of a medical care provider, and here you have social workers. You have a social worker, by the way, a licensed social worker, who admits that she pushed off the responsibility for both planning and execution to the unlicensed master of arts. That also leads us to the discussion of the negligent hiring, training, and supervision claim. Now, the other side says, well, you need an affidavit to support the underlying claim. The underlying claim, there was some negligence on the part of this social worker or this MA who was unsupervised. But, first of all, I don't case they cite for that proposition is an Illinois case which involved credentialing, in which the hospital was, negligence was based upon poor credentialing, and the court there said, well, yeah, you've got to have some underlying malpractice. Even if that's true, the malpractice here is the malpractice of a social worker, not of someone who fits into the 009.09 category, because it's got to mean, if you have to have a medical affidavit, then one or two things has to be the case.
Did the discharge plan have to be approved by a psychiatrist or physician or someone that we would classically consider to be within the scope of Chapter 41?
There's no indication in the record of that. What is indicated is that the physician had to make the decision.
The discharge?
The discharge.
So that. But what about the shape of the plan to which the patient was discharged?
The shape of the plan was specifically tasked to the social workers, and in this particular case, was pushed down from the licensed social worker to the unlicensed MA. And in the report that was attached, whether or not it's an affidavit, in the report that was attached, the interview by the division with the licensed social worker confirmed that, in fact, you know, she's got to fill out a schedule and push both the planning and the execution down to the MA.
On the negligence claim, is it necessary for you to establish that the discharge plan fell below any standard of care? Is that really needed for you to make out a claim for negligence?
I mean, there's certainly a general standard here. I think there's a general standard of reasonable care. The reason we talk about it is that we know from...
Yes, the question is it necessary to have a medical professional explain to the jury that you don't discharge someone suffering a mental disability to a location they're not supposed to go to, unsupervised in a taxi?
To be clear, Your Honor, I think the answer is no. I don't think that invokes any kind of expert opinion. It doesn't invoke certainly a medical opinion. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't.
So your complaint then falls within the DeBoer analysis that says if the complaint is not related to medical diagnosis, judgment, or treatment, it is going to be ordinary negligence.
That's correct, Your Honor. I appreciate we didn't cite DeBoer. But we saw we had some challenges, mostly to clarify exactly what the allegations were. But I think that's right. And so I guess we don't have to rely just on the implications of .009 as read in combination with 007.
Do you think we need to apply a different test than the one Justice Sotomayor just drew from DeBoer? Or do you think DeBoer, I mean, what's your misgivings about applying DeBoer here?
I don't know whether I have misgivings. I think that DeBoer probably applies. I think when we were doing the analysis, we were specifically trying to break these things out, these claims out into components of just straight negligence.
Mm-hmm.
The third claim, which has this sort of combined set of claims of social worker malpractice and gross negligence, trying to break it out and delineate.
You can still get the agency determinations in.
Right. So I have a short amount of time, but I think it's important to understand what actually, I know the court understands what actually happened. But to be clear, the physician's involvement ended at a point, and then this planning process took over. To my knowledge, there's no sign-off, there's no anything. What we do know for sure is that not only were the social workers and therefore the facility aware of the problems of sending Sean Zimborski home, they were aware of it. They planned for an alternative placement. They foresaw a problem. They literally foresaw it. It wasn't just reasonable foreseeability.
You're eating into your rebuttal time.
I appreciate it, Your Honor.
Just a reminder, you can consume it if you like.
I think I will end it right there, unless you have questions.
No.
May it please the court. My name is Mike Grangle. I'm here on behalf of defendants. And Justice Hardesty, Justice Sata, I think you hit on the precise question in this case. Is this a claim that challenges the professional judgment of the clinical workers or the social workers? And the unequivocal answer to that is yes. And for that reason, the bar doesn't apply. And Justice Hardesty, to answer your question, an expert is required. And here's why. The allegation in the complaint, at least count one, is that there was a failure to follow the Nevada Administrative Code regarding discharge planning. And what does that statute require of a social worker or an MA or anyone who's involved with that discharge planning? It requires them to apply their clinical judgment as to whether the place that they're about to send this person is a safe place. They need to use their clinical judgment to say, can this patient care for themselves in that location? Or is there any other reason based on the clinical condition of the patient that we should not send this person to this location we're sending them? Everything about this process, everything about this plan invokes the judgment of the social worker or MA or the whole team. It is correct that there's no evidence in this record as to whether this was a group decision. The evidence would show that this wasn't
a group decision. But it's on a pleading. It's on a motion to dismiss a complaint. So
you're absolutely correct, and I accept that. So for purposes of today, I'm accepting everything in the complaint is true.
Right.
But what the complaint says is that Spring Mountain, through its agents, did not follow that Nevada Administrative Code. So what does the Nevada Administrative Code tell them to do? It tells them to use their judgment, as use your professional education, training, and experience to decide what's the best thing for this patient. That is not something that someone like me, who has no medical training at all, has the expertise to know the answer to.
Did that claim go forward on an expert affidavit from a social worker?
Absolutely. I believe what 41A and 71 requires is an affidavit from someone who has the experience or expertise in that medical issue. I don't believe it has to be a physician. It could be anyone who has that expertise. My point is simply is that it is not something that a layperson can decide. Was it safe to send Sean Szymborski to his father's house? When, under the facts here, we know the last communication that was had by Mr. Lee Szymborski was that he did want his son to go back to his house. We understand that there were issues that kind of went back and forth on his house.
Isn't that a stretch with the facts? I think the facts suggest that there were messages going back and forth, that at some point Dad said, okay, other points Dad said, no, not so much.
Absolutely. And it was May 10th. On May 10th, in the morning, Lee Szymborski said, I don't want him to come here. Later that very same day, he changed his mind and said, it's okay for him to be here. So, but even, I guess, irrespective of what Lee Szymborski says, and obviously he says, no, we can't come here, we shouldn't send Sean there. But it comes down to a clinical judgment of the social worker, understanding these issues that are existent between Mr. Szymborski and Sean Szymborski, is it safe to send Sean Szymborski there?
Unattended in a cab, maybe he's supposed to get money to take a cab elsewhere.
Exactly. And so the claim, if you take the claim to its logical conclusion, is that we should have given him cab fare to go somewhere else, anywhere else in the world, but there. Again, there's no claim that we shouldn't have discharged him. It's just discharging him and sending him there. Well, if we had given him cab fare that was more than what we gave him, and told him to go to North Las Vegas, where he told us his apartment was, there was nothing preventing Sean from saying to the cab driver, can you go to my dad's house? There's nothing to prevent that, but that kind of gets beyond what the real question is. Understanding the plan was to send Sean to Mr. Szymborski's home, the social worker did that, exercising her judgment that it was safe to do so.
But the statute requires an affidavit of a medical expert. I mean, I think Mr. Olson's argument is not everything that is done in discharge planning requires a medical expert's affidavit in order to state a claim in either ordinary negligence or negligence of a social worker. Now, I don't know about negligence of a social worker, but to me, just reading the statute, it seems like a reach to say that all of these allegations require a medical expert's affidavit, because surely they go beyond the ken of what a medical professional would be addressing and into other areas, just mechanics. Do you drop a patient off at his dad's house when you know it's a tinderbox for this potentially psychotic patient?
Fair question. But I guess to look at the situation, there was the criticism of my staff is that there was something about Newsom or
Shaw. Part of your staff are not all doctors. Some of them are social workers. Some of them are masters of arts.
100% correct. But they're all applying, as it relates to this question of discharge planning, they're using their clinical judgment.
But the ministerial act of discharge carrying out, too.
If the question is, should we have given them cab fare? I mean, that doesn't require any level of expertise. It's just how much money to give them.
Sure.
But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about, was it safe, considering the clinical situation, to send Sean Szymborski to Mr. Szymborski's house? To answer that question, we need to know what the standard of care is for a social worker. We require expert testimony. So then answer the question, is that medical malpractice as defined by the Nevada statutes? NRS 41A-009 says malpractice is negligence of an employee, which is agreed, in performing services, which is exactly what we did, in formulating a discharge plan. So under the express terms of 41A-009, negligence of an employee in providing the service of discharge planning is medical malpractice.
So your point is that whether a physician or a psychiatrist is involved in the discharge plan, it doesn't matter.
Unless it was the physician who actually formulated the plan, again, which there's no evidence of this record. So we're accepting as true that this was the plan of the social worker. So the question is that social worker, who is my employee, is she providing a service to Mr. Szymborski by doing the discharge planning? The answer to that, I believe, is clearly yes. So therefore, under the definition of 41A-009, this is medical malpractice. This is not a claim against the janitor for not sweeping the floors properly. This is a claim against a professional, a social worker, in making a clinical judgment as to the best way to handle a patient. Whether we're talking about a social worker or in other circumstances, a nursing function, a physician function, the issue is the same. Are we calling upon this person or questioning that person's judgment, professional judgment? If the answer to that is yes, it's medical malpractice. And that's exactly what we have here, irrespective of which claim.
But in Blake Slidell, we say the affidavit requirement doesn't apply to the res ipsa, certain enumerated res ipsa.
I agree completely.
To me, it's kind of analogous when you're dealing with a social worker and the terms of the affidavit statute, not 009 but 071, talk about medical experts. So I'm puzzled by how statutorily an affidavit of a medical expert would help me assess the negligence of a social worker.
So
it raises the same kind of Seidel issue to me.
I'll call it more the Seidel issue. Is the reason why this court, I believe, rule that we don't need an affidavit in a res ipsa situation is that there are those specifically articulated bases for res ipsa.
Cut out the wrong part or whatever.
None of which apply here.
No, I'm not saying they do.
But the point being, the key is that in a res ipsa case, the burden of proof shifts to me. It's not on plaintiffs. So the court, I believe the logic was, since the burden is on me in a res ipsa case, we're not going to make plaintiff get an affidavit.
I thought it was a simpler one, which is that the statute dispenses with the requirement of expert testimony at time of trial. Therefore, we're not going to require you to go through the hoop of an expert affidavit to support your pleading. And the analogy that I would draw between Seidel and your case here is, so too does 071 say you don't need the expert. You need an expert affidavit, but it has to be a medical expert. Well, I'm not sure what a medical expert would bring to the analysis of a social worker's negligence. And so to me, this is very analogous to Seidel.
If I understand your question, you're saying that if this is something that does not call into question any level of expertise.
Medical expertise.
Medical or professional. I'm going to call it professional.
No, you can't.
Well, I think we have to. because it's a specialized area of knowledge. It's not a physician, it's a social worker. But a social worker went to school, they were trained into how to treat these people, how to best assess the...
Let me interrupt you, though, just for a minute. 41A071 requires an affidavit supporting the allegations submitted by a medical expert who practices or has practiced in an area substantially similar, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem I have is you have a social worker who allegedly was negligent while an employee of your client. How would a medical expert's affidavit explain a social worker's negligence?
Very simply. And again, there is evidence in this record that there was a clinical team that was involved in the care of Sean Szymborski. Other members of that team included the psychiatrist. A psychiatrist, and again, the evidence is in this record, but the evidence will show that this was a group decision. I understand it's not in this record. But
that's by the problem, we're at a pleading stage.
I understand, but still, we have the uncontroverted question of, we're calling into question the professional judgment of the social worker.
Yeah.
So how does plaintiff meet that standard, which I believe is the concern that you're raising, is that a psychiatrist, I believe an affidavit of a social worker would suffice for purposes of 071.
It wouldn't meet the literal language. It would not be a medical expert.
Well, that, certainly a psychiatrist can offer that opinion.
You would agree that the statutory scheme, the 41A, sounds in medical malpractice, correct?
Well, under the structure we're talking about, absolutely.
Yeah, pre-2015.
Yeah.
Of course. No, you would also agree, I presume, that social workers, in the exercise of their jobs, for instance, in the child welfare division, could be sued in ordinary negligence.
No, I don't. And here's why. I didn't mean to touch off.
That's all right. I guess you knew where I was going.
Okay. Because 41A009 does not limit itself, or does not limit its application to medical personnel.
Look at that.
It's broader than that. So it does cover other employees when they're providing services to the patient.
Including those in the mental health industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't think we can simply say that since this is not a, quote, medical question, we throw the statutory scheme out. The statutory scheme was very clearly much broader than just saying medical.
Well, let's change our thoughts a bit. Let's take it that there was a separate contract with an agency that only had social workers in its employ who were tasked with the mechanics of arranging implementation of a medically determined discharge. This guy's dischargeable, he's a danger to his father, don't take him there, but beyond that, do what you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they give it to this person who's charged with setting up the apartment or wherever you're going to put the person and how you're going to deal with it. And the only people in that whole company are social workers. And they want to sue that company for its negligence in the way in which they implemented the person's discharge. Would that come under 41A?
Probably not. And here's why. And again, I don't know why the legislature chose to tailor the definition of medical malpractice in the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
Under your hypothetical, it is not an employee of a hospital, so 41A009 would not apply. So you're correct. Under the hypothetical you pose, I don't believe 41A071 comes into play. But that's not what we have here, and that's not what the legislature told us to do. What the legislature told us to do in circumstances such as this, when it's employees of a hospital exercising their judgment in providing services to patients, that is medical malpractice. For reasons that I don't...
How do you deal with DeBoer, then?
You know, I confess I don't know precisely the facts of DeBoer, so I'm not sure. What I believe the issue with regard to DeBoer, does this call into question professional judgment? Or is this something that anyone walking along the street...
I think it was witnessing a legal document, a power of attorney.
I confess I don't know the facts of DeBoer sufficiently to understand.
Okay, fair enough.
The trust you question. I mean, the final point that I'm making, and I want to make one final...
You may not want to. That may be more wise trust.
Well, it is that this is exactly the type of situation that, if you consider the policy behind 41A009, was meant to address.
which is that if you're going to criticize a healthcare professional, in this case an employee of a hospital providing services, you need an affidavit. They don't have one. The trial court correctly determined that this was medical malpractice under 009, and for the same reasons as articulated by the trial court, the judgment should be affirmed. The last point taken, and I will sit down, is on this issue of duty to Lee Szymborski. There are no allegations in the complaint. And even if we get past this 41A071 issue.
That wasn't raised in the district court.
It was raised but not ruled upon.
I see.
So we raised it as an argument, but the court didn't rely on that. But we did raise it.
But it's not in the order, it's not appeal, is it?
Well,
but it's a separate basis. You're suggesting we can consider it as a separate basis.
100% correct.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead with that point.
It was just that. So the common law, there is no duty for a hospital, for example, to protect or give notice to a third party. The plaintiff here is not the patient. The patient here is the patient's father, who is not a patient here. There's no direct duty to Mr. Szymborski. What we have here, then, is that there are allegations in the complaint that, if true, would give rise to a duty to have done something for Lee Szymborski. And the answer to that is no. There are no allegations at all that Sean Szymborski had a history of violent behavior. There's no allegation that Sean made any threats to anyone, much less his father. There's no indication at all that Sean Szymborski provided or posed a threat to anyone. So even if you get past this affidavit issue, there's nothing in this record that would rise to the level of establishing that Spring Mountain owed a duty to Lee Szymborski. So for that separate reason that was raised at the trial court but not ruled on at the trial court is an alternative basis that this court could affirm the dismissal on. So unless you have any questions, I will sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Pringle. Rogers, give you an extra minute. You can complete your two-minute rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know that I'll need it. Counsel made a point of talking about the social worker as someone exercising professional judgment, not medical judgment. And 071 requires a medical expert's affidavit. The implication is, if you're not talking about a medical professional, that the statute doesn't apply.
I don't know. Discharging a patient, a mental health patient, doesn't require professional judgment, really?
Well, the act of discharging, making the decision to discharge, yes. Counsel talked about a team, but we know there was no team.
Well, the social worker, the hospital delegates to the social worker the decision-making process of releasing that individual and establishing the plan. Why isn't that within 41A?
Because it's not the decision of releasing. The doctors decide this person's going to be released. The social worker has the duty and push that duty down to the NCO.
Well, let me give you this hypothetical.
Okay.
I go into the hospital, I have knee surgery, the doctor says we can release this guy. And I'm handed a form, which is customary, that says here's the discharge. And you're going to take aspirin, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and the nurse signs it.
The nurse is a medical professional, Your Honor.
Okay. That's the distinction you make. How is the nurse any different than the social worker in this context?
Because in the statute it talks about medical expertise. Hmm.
So you don't consider mental health professionals to be within the medical definition in 41A?
Not the social worker.
Really? Okay. What's your position about the duty argument that was raised by counsel? Was it raised in the district court but not ruled upon?
Your Honor, if it's in those papers, it may be in the motion to dismiss and I missed it. What I would say about that issue on the merits of it is that there was a duty here. The regulations themselves say that one of the obligations is to is not only to create a safe place for this person to go, but to let the family know. They have an obligation to let him know, that let Lee Szymborski know, his son has been released to his home. They knew from their review and from their planning, this is the social worker, knew that it was not a good place to send him. And we've talked about that. They specifically said, we can't send him there to live. We need to get another place for him to live. They didn't confirm that place. They sent him instead to the unsafe place. But that duty isn't just to, in the regs, it's not just to the patient. It's also to the family. So there was a duty. There was a duty at the very least, to Louise Zimborski. And they didn't know, you know, they talked about foreseeability. They didn't.
Are you representing that the regs recite that they must notify the family members of the discharge?
Yeah, they recited that in the papers. That is their, they knew it. They didn't do it. They sent him where they shouldn't have sent him.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much, counsel, for your arguments. In briefing, the case stands submitted. Please be at recess.